When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Okay, welcome to another episode of What's New in History. We have a special guest today. And the story goes, in the far reaches of Indonesia is Flores. It's a long, narrow island of high mountains, precipitous cliffs, and deep ravines. And while doing field work on this island, our guest today, anthropologist Gregory Forth, came across people talking about a half-ape-like, half-human-like creature that once lived in a cave on the slopes of a nearby volcano. So over the years, he continued to record what locals had to say about these mystery hominoids, while searching for ways to explain them as imaginary symbols of the wild or other cultural representations. In his latest book, Between Ape and Human, An Anthropologist on the Trail of a Hidden Hominoid, you can follow him as he explores the mystery of this hominoid and the space they occupy in Leo cultures as both natural creatures and supernatural beings. I've read the book, and it's filled with adventure, an exploration of Leo culture and language, and an examination of the island's zoology and natural history. It's super interesting. But while it's especially of interest to fans of history, in 2003, several skeletons of small-statured early human species were found in a cave in western Flores. And this is the famed Homo floresiensis, which I always have a hard time pronouncing, also called the Hobbit people. And this ancient hominin was believed to have lived as recently as 12,000 years ago, and maybe even overlapping with the appearance of Homo sapiens on the island. And in view of this timing and the striking resemblance to these mystery creatures described by the islanders, Dr. Forth began to think about the creatures as possibly reflecting a real species, now extinct but retained in the cultural memory. So, and then investigating reports from the region of the island, he soon found that the locals described these ape men as still living, and dozens even claimed to have seen them. So, about our author and our guest today, Gregory Forth, received his doctorate at Oxford and was a professor of anthropology at the University of Alberta for more than three decades. And he's a fellow of the Royal Society of Canada, and is the author of more than 100 scholarly papers and several academic books. But this is his first book for a general audience. So welcome, Gregory Forth. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, many thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. And actually, a couple weeks ago, we found a story. I think it was, I forget what it was in, and we briefly covered it. We just mentioned that there was an article, you know, in the news, I mean, it was Forbes or something, about your book. So we talked about it to our listeners a little bit and basically just covered the article. And I said, I'm going to see if I could contact the author and if he'll do an interview with us. So we're honored and our fans are waiting, you know, to hear about what's going on with these, with Flores Island and possibly an ancient hominoid still there.
Yeah. Okay. I just ask, the Forbes articles, was that recent?
I'm not sure if it was Forbes, but it was quite recent. I could find
out. Okay, now I know Forbes had a review of the book about a year ago when the hardcover first came out.
It may have been. Sometimes the articles I get are copies from the other one, so it was mm-hmm. definitely within a year, but it was relatively recent. I think most of it was the first chapter, I believe, was in the. Oh no, I know what it was on. It was in Sapiens. That's where I saw it.
Sapiens. Okay.
You know Sapiens. I can never pronounce his name. Nora Harari, and they have like a website with interesting things like that.
Oh, Sapiens. Yeah. No, indeed, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us something. I mean, just like I'm a very inquisitive type of person, and I'm sure our fans are too. I'm just like, I wouldn't even know where to start. I would just say, you know, just like tell us about your work and give us a little go. Start off somewhere where we found these ape men, as you call them.
Yeah, sure. Well, I might begin by saying I am a professional anthropologist, but I'm now retired. Have been since the end of 2019, just before the pandemic, which was another great piece of timing.
Yeah, good timing.
But I began my anthropological research way back in the 1970s. Very much younger than now, of course, when I very young in general, I should say, when I began a doctoral field work on the island of Flores, the island of Sumba, which is also in the eastern part of Indonesia. About 10 years after that, in the early to mid 1980s, I began a new piece of research on Flores Island, just to the north of Sumba. And while I was there on Flores, in the early days of my Flores research, I began hearing stories about beings that were human-like, but people said they're not fully human. They were smaller than modern humans, including local humans on Flores, who were much shorter than typically than North Americans.
Yeah.
For example, that was in a place called Nage, which is right in the center of Flores, and it's the region of Flores Island that I've actually written most about. Whereas, as the present book Between Ape and Human is focused on the Leo people who live a bit further to the east. Anyway, when I started work among Naga, I was particularly interested in a legend or myth which concerned a group of these small human-like beings that were said to have lived on the higher slopes of a nearby volcano.
Mm-hmm.
To have interacted with local humans, largely in negative ways, by, you know, stealing their crops and so on, so that eventually people, the members of a particular group, inhabitants of a particular village in Nage, got together and decided to exterminate these these little hominoids. Yeah,
I did hear that story once in a podcast years ago. That was the first thing that piqued my interest on the story.
There you are. I mean, I have written on this, previously before I got onto the present book, the present case. I found it fascinating because it was people there in Nage. Nage people were insisting that, you know, this wasn't a folk tale or a fairy story like others we've told you. This is something that actually happened, and indeed, the beings themselves, the hominoids, were described in a largely, you know, naturalistic kind of way. After I was well into my Naga research, I extended this project over quite a number of years. So I was still visiting Naga in the late 1990s into the 2000s. But I extended this research into a region called Leo, as I said. And it was there that in Leo that I encountered a story very similar, actually, to the legend of the Nage hominoids, about creatures that were killed in a cave, basically. I should say that most of my research on flores as an anthropologist hasn't been concerned with this particular topic.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, no, it's been taken up with all kinds of things to do with local society, culture, and language, including, indeed, the indigenous religion, the language, as I said, you know, texts, stories, local oral histories, all this kind of thing. But more than that, local folk zoology, as it's sometimes called, which is a local knowledge of animal species with which people share their environment and indeed, you know, deal with in various ways, on the hunt as food and all the rest. So I my interest in hominoids has always been located in the context of a general okay. knowledge of the culture and language of the people concerned. And I think the book, you know, the book shows that as one of the respects in which I dare say it's, you know, it's quite original. Anyway, I moved into Leo and found people, Leo people talking about a being they called Laihoa, which was generally similar to the Nage hominoids, but with some differences. For one thing, it was generally described as smaller bodied. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a creature that would be standing around, you know, according to local descriptions, around a meter or a yard tall.
Like a little kid.
Yeah, that's right. Like a small child. In fact, they use that comparison themselves. Completely cultureless in the sense that these things don't wear clothes or have other technology. Somewhat hairy bodied, although how hairy that varies from case to case, description to description, I mean, looking like humans, except particularly in regard to the face, they look somewhat more like monkeys. I should say, by the way, that I don't know if you're familiar with the distinction between apes and monkeys. There's a definite zoological difference. That there are no apes in eastern Indonesia. But there are monkeys. There's one species of monkey which was imported to the island, actually, by all indications, several thousands of years ago. But no, ape does the job much better than monkey for reasons that become clear in the book. Also, the Indonesian language, which my hosts also speak, besides their own local languages, the Indonesian language doesn't distinguish between apes and monkeys, just as not so very long ago English didn't distinguish either. No, this is a modern zoological development.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Anyway, yeah, so that's what the Laihoa look like. I mean, another distinction from difference from the Nage hominoids, called Abu Gogo, by the way.
Yeah, the Abu Gogo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, okay. Was that the Laihoa are said still to be alive.
Because they said that they killed all the Nabugogo in that cave fire.
That's right. But Leo, some Leo suggest, well, they may have become extinct fairly recently with, you know, reduction of forests and these kinds of unfortunate modern developments. But to all intents and purposes, they are things that have been around within the lifetime of most older adults. Right. In Leo country, and that was an important difference, and it was because of that it was only among Leo that I could get descriptions of specimens that people claim to see.
So you talk to Nage people, but they don't say they see them anymore, or you don't talk to them as much anymore, or during those your studies.
Well, yeah, I mean, I should also say that everybody who knows anything about the Laihoa says that they are rare, and that, you know,
right,
very few people have seen them, and you know, this fits with the statistics.
You use the example in the book of like a wolverine. Like, we know there's such a thing as a wolverine, but the chances of us ever seeing one, or people even live in wolverine country, is very, very rare. But you know that it's a thing.
Yeah. No, actually, where I am at the present in Edmonton in Canada, we're within their territory, but they are rare. But
have you ever seen one of them?
I haven't. I've seen stuffed ones.
All right,
I've seen them on film, of course.
Right.
No, never seen one in the wild. Nor would I particularly want to, because they're very dangerous animals, very vicious.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, the stories are so different that the people tell. Mm. It's like you're not a Bigfoot hunter. You're an anthropologist, and then these stories just kept hearing them, and they just become so interesting. And then in 2003, when they found Homo floresiens. I can never pronounce it properly. I mean, that was just had to be amazing to you.
Well, it was. I mean, it was. What do they say these days? Jaw dropping, gobsmacking, that sort of thing. I mean, one thing that was very important and which contributed to my amazement was that I'd already heard about the Laihoa before the find of Homo floresiensis was made public, which was a year after the discovery of the remains. But that discovery also came after I'd heard about Laihoa and of course the Nage hominoids. So it was clear from that, and this is one of the factors that encouraged me to write the book. Was that it wasn't possible, not possible for a number of reasons, and not probable for a number of reasons, but it wasn't possible that the descriptions of Laihoa, for example, had come from people somehow getting copies of the journal Nature news stories that had spun off from that. And looking at the details of the paleontological articles, and also that the visual reconstructions of Homo floresiensis, the similarity was quite amazing. We can't possibly know how hairy right. Homo floresiensis was, but the overall appearance and especially the size, it fitted very, very well. I should perhaps say, with regard to the size, for example, that different reports give different sizes. So we're not talking about some kind of a stereotype here,
right.
Which again is consistent with different people seeing different things, different individuals, but members of the same species, as it were, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you saw a guy from Sweden versus a person from Flores Island, they would look a lot different.
They would. You would still recognize them as human, though. I think
true.
There's
That's
some interesting
true.
Questions that, you know, arise from that. The Leo, though, are quite certain that no matter how human-like were or are the Laihoa, they are not humans like us, as they
yeah.
say. That there's something a bit different, indeed something uncanny about their appearance.
Yeah, like from reading the book, you could tell, like, you know, we learn about how possibly or definitely we know that we have Neanderthal, right? We have Neanderthal DNA in our Homo sapiens genes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that the Homo sapiens and Neanderthals at some point made it back in history. But it doesn't seem like anybody would want to mate with these people or these creatures or however.
It's an interesting question. One can be surprised, I think, at the sort of matings that can take place. I'm not sure. Well, you know, according to modern tastes, Neanderthals.
Yeah, it could be really lonely, maybe.
Attractive either, but it certainly happened. No, I mean, there is connected with that, closely connected with that, that there is a whole question, and this is a paleontological question about Homo floresiensis, and that is how closely related, indeed, floresiensis is to Homo sapiens,
yeah.
or even Neanderthalensis, which are, you know, certainly more closely related to
right.
to us than whether Homo floresiensis. There is also a question, and it's not just a terminological quibble, but an important question of why we should classify these beings in the genus Homo.
Right, I was thinking the same thing myself, and I think you cover that in the book. And while I was reading it, I thought that. And now I just had a thought, though. I wonder if maybe 50,000 years ago or 12,000 years ago, when they sort of had more of the roam of the island without other humans living there, and there was more of them, maybe they had more of a culture, and maybe, I'm not saying that they had cities, of course, and everything, but maybe they still didn't wear clothes. But if these are the same people and they're still around, and there's so few of them,
mm-hmm.
maybe they've sort of culturally, you know, went backwards.
Devolved or
Devolved
degenerated.
Is the word, yeah.
I say, first of all, that, 15,000 years ago, or 10,000 years ago, for that matter, nobody had cities, you know. 15,000 years ago, we were all hunter-gatherers, food collectors. But with the Homo floresiensis, we're talking about a hominin that had a brain about the size of a chimpanzee's.
Yeah.
In other words, it was about a third the size of a modern human brain. We don't. There's no definite evidence for either fire or stone tools. You know, there's which again, very different from Homo Neanderthalensis, Neanderthal man, I should say, for a start. Different also from Homo erectus, which. It goes way back, near 2 million years ago. So it really is. I mean, the Homo floresiensis, although the majority of specialists are quite sure that it's real, really a new species and as physically primitive as it appears to be,
yeah.
It's still described as an enigma because it was just... you know, it wasn't just me that was shocked with my field materials about Laihoa and Abugogo and the other Flores hominoids, but everyone was amazed at Homo floresiensis because it just, especially the date initially given for it. I might say something about the dates and that you mentioned a figure of 15,000 years ago. That was initially the most recent date. The site, the discovery site, has been re-examined, and an older set of dates 50 or 60,000 years previously has been produced for the time when those specimens at the discovery site died. But the remains of this species have only been found at a single site. Whereas, we can be sure that the hobbits, as they're sometimes called, couldn't possibly have lived just at a single
site.
When it died out, or I suppose I should say now, if it really did die out, it remains an open question. Since the discovery of Floresiensis, paleoanthropologists have gone back to Flores looking for its ancestors, and they found remains of another smaller hominin in another part of the island that dates to around 700,000.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so very old indeed. Now, they can't say that is the ancestor, but, from what evidence they have, it appears similar, which would mean that the Floresiensis lineage goes way back, evidence for stone tools, or what may be stone tools, to suggest that, there have been hominins of some sort on Flores Island before 1 million years ago, which is all just a couple of decades ago. None of this would have been maybe a bit more than a couple of decades ago, but not long ago anyway. This would have been considered just the stuff of fantasy. So I mean, one of the suggestions I make in the book is it's just a question, really, is if Homo floresiensis or its ancestors could survive on the island for a million years, around a million years ago to much more recently, then why not in the last century or even the last decade or even last week.
And I think modern humans, like real modern, like us today, we don't you will see an island like Flores and we'll see it on a map. And we know that we see wolverines and we see white tigers and we find everything. So we figure, well, they must, if they were there, we would see them. But I don't think, as maybe Westerners, and we don't realize how remote something like that really is. It's not like a little field behind your house. This is a very remote, and if you're not really looking, you won't find it, right?
Well, that's right. And two points there. I mean, one is that there are new species, not as dramatic as a new hominin, a living hominid, or hominin, right. Indeed. But new species, nevertheless, are being discovered and documented all the time. And the other point connected with that is that new species are often, usually I should say, discovered not because somebody is specifically gone out to look for that thing, or a team has gone in search of it, but something incidental to another piece of research, or to use ordinary language, by accident, people have stumbled across it. And in that respect, of course, I do briefly deal with in the book species that were thought to be extinct years ago, or thought to, they should have been extinct years ago, have been discovered and alive and reasonably well, including two in Southeast Asia and one in Indonesia, the coelacanth, a large marine fish.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I think I've heard about it. Yes, I did. They're supposed to be extinct, and somebody caught one.
Yeah. Well, in fact, they've discovered two separate species of them during the last 100 years or so.
I mean, there is one part in your book I just saw before we started talking, because I was skipping towards the end, and I'll quote a little bit. It said something like, here it goes, "The idea goes back as far as French naturalist Georges Cuvier, and his assertion published in 1812 that there is little hope of discovering new species of large quadrupeds because large animals should have more difficulty staying hidden than smaller ones," which seemed reasonable. But since he made that numbers of large primate animals have been found, like gorillas and I mean, then they before that you mentioned they thought pygmies were just a you know a story that wasn't a real thing, and then we found no pygmies are real. So hey, we really don't know, right? I mean, like you said, it's a very remote. Not anybody's looking for them.
No, that's quite right. There are a number of institutional reasons why people don't simply go out looking for something that might exist. Something I go into in the last chapter of the book. I mean, this is
right. You don't want to be booked as a Bigfoot hunter or something like that. Which is why, even like when I said to you, I said, "Well, if you like to go on our show, we're not like aliens built the pyramids people here. We're doing real, you know, like you're doing real research, and we like to do real history and." We're not just asking questions like some of these people. I guess that could be kind of a bad thing, I guess, if some, you know, those Bigfoot hunters like sort of catch on to this. But boy, really would like somebody to. I mean, could you imagine if we find a tribe or something of like ancient? What would that be like? Do you think? Could you imagine?
Well, a group of what exactly? Something like Bigfoot?
We found a couple of these. What would you call them? How do you pronounce
it? Alaihoa, yeah.
Imagine if we found a family of them. Yeah. And they were walking around. It's funny how you say how they walk like clowns because they have big feet, so they have to lift their legs.
Well, that's how Homo floresiensis walked, apparently. And something interested me particularly is that certain descriptions of Alaihoa suggest that they may well have walked the same way as the paleos have inferred, so quite remarkable. But if we actually found a group of these hominins, or even a single specimen, dead or alive, it would be earth-shattering news. I don't think about this a lot, but the question has occurred to me whether I would get any any acknowledgement in that.
I think you would.
Once
you Google it, you'll find a lot of stories about you.
that's right. But no, the point being that whoever, well, more specifically, whatever scientist was able to observe, to inspect the specimen and decided what it was, or offered an interpretation or an hypothesis, that would be the person who would get the most, I would have thought, the most media attention. Though
I think they'd be calling you for interviews on CNN too. You would be on the BBC and CNN and all, everything. It's funny that there's not any, maybe even after your book, maybe some people would look for it. It would just seem like you would make a name for yourself if you were to find a family of these in a cave somewhere.
Oh, indeed. Yeah.
But there's nobody really looking for them as far as besides you, as far as your work, what you've done. There's nobody out there going into those caves and seeing what's in there.
Well, not so far as I know. I a few things to say about that. I mean, first of all, I point out that the nature of my research has been dealing with people who know about the hominoids, and including some who say they've seen one. So I don't have. I'm not a field zoologist or primatologist, so I was restricted in that respect too. But also, I must confess that I really got into this topic in earnest back in the 2000s to 2005 and there beyond. By which time I was, getting on in years, and as it is now, for health reasons, I'm not able to contemplate.
Yeah, be climbing in those hot mountains. And
Well, I mean, it's to do that, you would need somebody who's fairly young and of course pretty fit and knowledgeable about how to deal with the. Right. The terrain and all this.
I just had a funny thought. Maybe when they do find it and they make a movie, the Rock will play you, right? He'll be, The Rock what's his name? He was in Jumanji and all those, and he's, you know, he's the big strong wrestler guy.
Oh, yeah.
The Rock. Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. He'll play you in the movie.
I know who you refer to. Yeah. Well, if somebody wanted to make such a film, they could. But I'm not sure I would necessarily endorse it. But getting on, yeah, no, I linking with what we were saying before about institutional barriers, if you will, to deliberately going in search of new species. Yeah, I mean, people who were qualified field zoologists or mm-hmm. primatologists, for example, would have difficulty getting sponsors and funding for their work. Also, of course, there is a cultural aspect to all this, so you would need at least one anthropologist such as myself, you know, along. My part of my success, if we want to call it that, has to do with the fact that I worked in Indonesia. I've been working in Indonesia since the 1970s. So it's getting on for 50
years. You speak the languages, all that kind of thing, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. And I mean, that's one reason why my work on Flores went, I think, as smoothly as it did. And I'm talking about mm-hmm. researches into all kinds of local matters was because I'd already had the experience of Sumba, and I could, you know, speak knowledgeably about, you know, well, not about Flores Island initially, but about Sumba Island, a neighboring island,
right.
and
people trusted you then,
people
and
in general,
like
and
right.
all this. So, that was a tremendous benefit.
Is anybody like going to continue your work now? Do you have like a protege or anything like that?
I don't really. As I say, I'm retired.
We're looking for one.
I'm taking retirement quite seriously. I mean, I'm still writing, but I don't, of course, have any graduate students. Even so, you know, that said, I it's not impossible, you know, that in the future somebody will contact me for assistance who, wants to do something like that. I've had a number of film producers contact me since the book. Came out. Nothing's come of that yet, and my agent tells me that, you know, that this is typical, that producers, filmmakers do typically have a tough time, convincing whoever it is, the History Channel or National Geographic people with the money.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Right. This is going to, draw a sufficient audience, which, of course, is the line on these things. But even so, my agent also said that you know, if it happens, it can often take years. So, you know, it might still happen that somebody
it would take it on. Yeah, I mean, you get publicity. Somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's like stories of little people all over, like not just in this culture, obviously. You know, there's stories of leprechauns and all these things.
Yeah.
But I mean, reading your book, you could see a lot of these stories just, they're so similar, you know, they're not like, there's obviously, like you mentioning, you know, you guys should read the book. You know, you say about people will embellish a little here and a little there, but, you know, it just seems like so many things. It's like, why would they be making up all these things and, you know, we triangulate one person said one. So like, what do you think?
Yeah.
What do you really think? I mean, I think there probably is something there from reading your book.
Well, I mean, that's the possibility I deal with in the book as one of a number of possible explanations for what people told me. And I go through quite a number. The first thing I do after the introductory chapter and after a chapter which gives a general description of what people say the Leo ape men look like, after that in chapter three, I confront head on the question of, well, might these just be, you know, imaginary beings, spirits, spiritual beings,
right?
You know, and indeed, I mean, Leo and other Flores Islanders do believe, we can say, in the existence of spirits, and just in the way, you know, many people around the world also believe in them. Yeah. And you know, but believe in God, you know, a being that is beyond the natural, natural, supernatural beings, which can't simply be seen like Dwayne Johnson or whoever might be.
That's a way to bring it back.
Seen. So, you know, and what I do in that chapter is I say, well, yeah, there are similarities, certainly, and the small size is one thing, that there are an awful lot of differences between the way that Leo people describe the Laihoa and the way they describe forest spirits and other supernatural beings whose existence they recognize. And indeed, they themselves say, you know, look, no, these are not spirits. These are different. You know, and they themselves recognize the differences. Also,
they're an actual animal.
No, I mean, another thing to say is that there's spiritual beings that Flores Islanders recognize, believe in, if you will. They play a part in their ritual life. These are beings that... in their indigenous religion, indeed. I mean, these are things that people, you know, either pray to or take religious measures to avoid or drive away or what have you. Whereas none of that applies to the Laihoa. I mean, they are all, to all intents and purposes, they're like a documented natural species.
Yeah, they just think of it as another animal or something that lives in the forest, like a monkey or...
Well, that's right. They do find them, weird, if you like, uncanny, in ways that they don't find most animals. And a large part of the reason for that, of course, is that they look so much like humans, and yet they're different.
Yeah. But so... Like, in your opinion, you think that they're there? I mean, I think you probably do. I don't know. But I don't know if you said it in the book, your bottom line.
Well,
you don't want to go on the record.
Well, I want people to read the book.
Well, yeah, read the book then. Don't everyone say what he thinks. I'm good with that. Tell me offline.
As I said, what I do in the book is I look at a number of possible explanations. In fact, all the possible, general sorts of possible explanations I can think of, I come to the conclusion that these things really existing and people, you know, actually a few people actually seeing them is as good an explanation as any other, and in fact is a better explanation. It makes more sense than other
Yeah, everybody making it up.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
it's kind of what we're finding out about aliens now. Not to get into that, but boy, there's a lot of stuff in the news now, and you're like, this is really crazy. This seems like, yeah, you know, all these people seeing them, must be something going on, but we're not talking about that right now.
Well, I mean, there's enough, but, you know, there's perhaps enough craziness, you could say, in the world, some very serious craziness, you know, quite apart from space aliens or, yeah, or, you know, non-sapiens hominins that still exist. No, I mean, one needs to keep an open mind and very often, you know, rethink conventional wisdom. The recent review, which I think you know from Current Anthropology, makes that point.
Well, I mean, I definitely would suggest our listeners to check out this book. And did I miss anything? Is there anything else you wanted to say? I know we've been actually talking for like almost 50 minutes.
I would say I find the most, dare I say, readable, entertaining parts of the book are the local stories from people, yes, I know. Their names are disguised with pseudonyms. And the details of what they told me, and not just what they told me they saw, but how they felt about they saw and so on. And if anybody deserves credit for this project, it's those, you know, those high.
Yeah, because a lot of them didn't really want to talk about it. They think that, you know, you'd be crazy, or I know a lot of their wives didn't want them to talk about it. So, you know, we don't want any spoilers here, but I really recommend the book because it's very interesting. The stories are great. And, you know, it's like anything, like memory changes. That's what I remember. Like, you're kind of like a detective. You know, like you're interviewing all these people, and then you know how a story, you know, memory changes. You remember a lot of them think they had tails was a big thing, and then we know that, you know, hominins and hominoids don't have tails, and mm-hmm. apes don't have tails, and you know, one day they say they have a tail, and one day they don't, but it doesn't mean that they're lying. That's a lot of the interesting stuff.
On that particular point, one thing I do go into in chapter two early on is why they might think they have tails, and I go into maybe a bit technical for a lot of people, but it's really quite simple. Leopi, other Flores Islanders as well, that they not only do they think that all animals have tails, whether they're particularly evident or not, but they talk about animals in tales. That is to say, if you want to talk about a number of horses or a number of, magpies or elephants or anything else, you have to talk about so many tales of horses or.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And it goes, as they acknowledge, this applies even to things which they say don't have tails. We're as human beings, humans like us, are never spoken of in that way. Although we do have a little bit of a tailbone as well, as it happens, even more than a gibbon, which is a kind of ape.
I was thinking maybe they have a little hair. These animals, maybe they have a little hair on the bot. Like maybe where your tailbone is, a little bit of hair comes out. And I could, you know, you're scared and you see this little what? You know, you might think it had a tail. You only see it for a second.
Well, that's correct as well. But nevertheless, they infer that they have tails because, as they say, they're not humans. They are ultimately animals, even though they're very human-like. And this is another aspect of their culture and the way they classify nature, if you will. So these are all things that have to be, considered in weighing the various possibilities.
Yeah. I mean, I would say to the listeners, and I, first of all, thank you for coming on our show today. It was great. I think I enjoyed the book. I'm going to finish it. I'm just going to say I was getting through it. I had a crazy week at work, and my daughter was sick.
Oh,
I appreciate you rescheduling, too. Thank you. And keep your Canadian wildfires to yourself, please.
Oh, I guess nothing can do, but it's funny because it hasn't been bad around here. I mean, we're quite close to fires, but... because the direction of the prevailing winds, we've had a few smoky days, but nothing like they had it in Chicago and Yes.
And where I live.
Yeah, where you're in New York State, is it?
I'm near New York, yeah. I'm in Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is, we were just as bad as New York. Yeah, we had some really bad days.
Yeah. No, I remember, about 12 years ago, we had it very bad. Yeah, those were fires from the neighboring province to the west, British Columbia, but they blew this way as well. And, it's not...
Keep those there. You guys, the book is called, wait, let me go so I make sure I say it right. Oh, the name of the book is Between Ape and Human, an Anthropologist on the Trail of a Hidden Hominoid. And it's available in all places, right? I get it on my Google Play book.
Yep.
You could get it on Amazon, I'm sure, and you could get it on your Kindle, anywhere you read your books, right?
Yeah. Actual bookstores are a possibility as well.
Bookstores are a possibility.
Yep, indeed.
I'm not that young. I'm in my 50s, but I do like to read on Google because I could take my phone with me or I could take my tablet and I could make notes and I'm into it.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's where I'm reading it.
Okay.
So, yeah, well, thank you very much, Gregory Forth, and for being on our show. I will, check out our Facebook page, please. Make sure you get Dr. Forth's book. Check out our Facebook page. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you.